Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Brendan Hauser with Evoke Bike. I have an incredible guest today, Claudio Cucinata, who is a World Tour coach with Astana, former pro racer in Europe. And I was so excited to talk to him that I did not even do an intro. So I told him at the end, hey, let's do the intro and I'll clip it to the beginning. But I just think it's funny. And it's sort of, I tried to clip it out and it just messes up the flow because we actually kept talking for a minute. And the hour went by so fast. Claudio clearly has just so much knowledge. It was really a great conversation. So I hope you enjoy it. Claudio, sorry for being such a fanboy and rudely not introducing you properly, but we dove in headfirst and you definitely passed on a lot of knowledge. We're so grateful for you to spend your time with us. Everybody, enjoy this conversation.
Buongiorno.
Can you hear me?
Ciao.
Nice to meet you.
You too. Thank you so much for doing this. This is incredible.
Thank you.
Yeah, really appreciate you making the time. Super pumped to talk to you from both sides of the coin as an athlete and a coach, and just sharing some pearls and wisdom that you have that we can pass on to other anxious cyclists looking to get better.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's jump right in it. I think maybe a good format, we'll just talk kind of your story up until you became a pro, talk about training, racing, and if there's anything that you want to talk about, tangents are always welcome. So just go whichever way you want. Does that sound good to you?
Yeah, it's okay.
Cool.
Great.
So tell us about you as a kid up to like your first pro team, a huge span of years. What are you up to? Are you playing sports? Are you only riding? Do you have siblings around you? What's kind of, who's Claudio as a kid?
Yeah. When I was a kid, I started playing many different sports. But after when I was 9 years old, I started with cycling. Mm. And that was the one. I mean, yeah. I liked it for 2 years, 1 or 2 years, I don't remember. I also played football and cycling in the same year. But then I decided to go on only with cycling, and I really enjoyed it. So,
did you have kids in your neighborhood that were riding also? Or that's the thing in the US, like a lot of kids aren't in this sport yet. So you get a road bike and you're riding by yourself. Like, did you have friends that you were able to play bikes with, or how did that unfold?
I had friends riding bicycles, but not a sport, only riding just for fun.
Yeah.
And when I started cycling as a sport, I made new friends. Mm-hmm. The team when I was young was a team at based at 10 kilometers from my house, so it was not so far, and I had teammates at 5-10 kilometers from my house, so we became friends, and with some of them the friendship is still there. So sometimes I still ride with some of the kids I used to ride when I was young.
That's so awesome.
I also have a sister, and she's 4 years younger than me. And as I was riding, she started riding very, very young. She started riding at racing at 6 years old. And yeah, but she was much stronger than me. In fact, she also became a world champion in junior category, yeah, on the track. So she had a professional career too, and she quitted 3 or 4 years ago. But she had a nice career. She won a world championship, European championship, I don't know how many Italian national championships.
That's awesome.
On the track. So she was a sprinter. Yeah.
Were your parents athletes also?
Not really. I mean, my dad used to ride his bicycle, but as an amateur, a recreational cyclist. He was he did many sports when he was young, but when I started racing with cycling, he studied for becoming coach. And when I was, I think, 10 or 11 years old, he became the coach of my team. And since there, he has always been coaching young kids, young cyclists, and he still does it. Now he's 70 years old, and he still helps young kids, young guys to become good cyclists.
That's awesome. I love that. What's when you were younger and you guys were on this team, and let's say from the years of maybe, you know, junior years, what's training like over on a team like that? How strict is training? Like, is it just, hey guys, go ride? You know, are you telling people like go do endurance, or is it like you're doing intervals? What's that format like for people that young over there? Yeah.
So when I was young, when I was until 12 years old, it was, I don't even remember what we used to do. I mean, we just used to ride and play and race,
be a kid,
one against each other. Yeah. And races were just fun. I mean, I don't remember the races, but I remember the time we spent before and after the race. Of that when I was very young. From, I think, from 15 years old, things became beginning harder. So training was more important. But until 16 years old, I only used to ride with the other guys of my team. I mean, we used to ride all together. The only training was riding together and to do efforts on the climbs, but nothing so specific. Okay. From 17.
So let me jump in there. So when you say like efforts on the climbs, just like, hey, we see a climb, who's getting to the top first?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just like
playing that. Playing around, riding, having a,
until 16 years old, it was like that. You have to consider that I was 16 years old in 1998. So also in higher level cyclists, training wasn't so specific as it is now. Okay. So in many cases, the training was the same also in the higher levels categories. I mean, of course, the speeds were higher, but they were not so specific workouts.
Okay.
And when I was 17, so the first year as junior, so in junior category, so the first international UCI category. Mm-hmm. There, the coach that I had when I was a junior started giving us little training programs. Okay, so one or two times per week, we used to train together with the other guys of the team. But the other day, so 2-3 days per week, I used to ride on my own. I had my training program to follow. And sometimes I had a teammate also that lived close to me. So we used to train together. But when I was junior, the team was a bigger one. And it wasn't so close to our house. It was 100 kilometers. So I didn't have so many teammates close to me as when I was a young cyclist. Okay. So I just used to ride with one or two other guys, or sometimes on my own. I had my training schedule and I tried to follow it as best as possible. And I think that in junior category, things started to be more serious. Okay.
So were you doing that off rate of perceived exertion or a heart rate monitor? There was no
heart rate monitor.
Heart rate, okay.
I had my first heart rate monitor when I was under 16, so at 15, 16 years old.
Okay.
But then it was just for fun, for learning how to use it. My dad bought, I remember, one of the first heart rate monitors in, I don't know if it was the only one of my category who had one when I was 15, but some of the few who had it. And when I became junior, I started training watching it. I mean, I was looking at the heart rate monitor. We had the first physiological tests. So every one of the guys knew his anaerobic threshold and all the heart rate zones. And so we used to train with that.
Mm. Okay, it's cool. It's I love that you have so much. So we're actually, are you, you're 39, right?
Years now old? I'm 39, yes.
Yeah, so I was looking you up on just your history. We're 5 days apart. I'm January 17th. So when people usually throw out dates, I interview some of these guys and they're like 23 years old. So I'm like, wait, born in 1998, da, da, da. No, so when you say 98, I know that reference point really well. It's so funny.
You understand me, yeah.
Although I was not riding a bike then. I started riding a bike in 2008. And I got a road bike in 2009. So glad I found the sport when I did, but I wish I had found it earlier at times. But that's life.
Yeah.
So we'll go then. You turned, if I'm correct, Pro Conti in 2006. And then did you race? How long were you racing pro for?
I've been racing as pro from 2006 to 2010. So 5 years.
What are those years like in terms of training, racing? Like what, when you just think like right now, when you just thought back, like what do you think about those training sessions, about the racing? Like you're just, it's an experience that so few cyclists get to taste. What really do you remember the most about those days?
I think I'm a weird professional cyclist because I was professional, but I wasn't doing only that. I mean, I wasn't only riding, but I was studying because I degreed when I was in 2006, in 2005. And then I got the specialization in 2010 in sports science. And I mean, when I was under 23, so the category before pro cycling, I had it was very hard. If I'm honest, I don't know how, now I could how I could do what I used to do, because I really I had to go to lessons at university, and I had to study a lot. I used to train not as much as my competitors because they had the whole day to train, but I used to train, for example, in winter. I could only train on indoor trainer that they weren't, that it wasn't the indoor trainer we have now.
Yeah, you were on Zwift.
No, I weren't on Zwift. I was in front of the wall and it was very hard to do that. But it was very, very, it was a good experience.
So let me ask you that. What, someone just asked me this, my history of coming up through, I'm only a category one cyclist, but I was in Northern US. So snowy, horrible winter. And people asked me, like, we had heard you used to ride a trainer and do these like big basement rides. And I wanted it. Like, that's my own, was my only option. And I didn't want to be dropped every race in spring. What was driving you to do that? Because we look back and people have it so much easier with Zwift and all the other platforms and like entertainment. And it's just like, what do you think was getting you to kit up? What was the motivation?
The motivation was the same as you. I mean, I was in under 23 category, and if I didn't train, the races would have been very, very hard.
Yeah,
they were hard. Also, training. So if I didn't train, they were even harder.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm lucky because I've always been a good cyclist. So I used to have a nice results as in young categories, but also in junior category and also in under 23 categories. So that was a big motivation because I could see that if I could train properly, results were coming. Probably if results weren't coming, I wouldn't have done that. Right. I'm honest. And another thing was that they were my first years at the university, and it was very nice and very I learned a lot from training on the indoor trainer, because I could make experiments on myself. Okay, I could try to apply what I was studying at the university on myself. So I've been my first customer. Okay. Yeah. So I from 19 years old, I didn't have any coach. I was the coach of myself. Okay. Even because now there are coaches everywhere. Mm-hmm. When I was 19, it wasn't like that. There were only a few coaches. It wasn't a job. I mean, there were only few coaches.
And what were some of those experiments that you were running on yourself? What would you try to figure out in the lab of the basement?
Many things, because I think something interesting is that I'm pretty sure that I was one of maybe the first under 23 in Italy to use a power meter.
Okay.
It was 2001, and I bought my first power meter.
SRM?
I bought.
Saved up the money.
I used a second hand, okay, not a new one, because I couldn't afford a new one. I bought a used SRM, and there 1 year later, I bought one of the first power taps.
Okay.
In the hub, okay.
Yeah.
It was very nice. And so I was one of the first guys with a power meter. In fact, someone used to, also my sports director when I was under 23, used to look at my wheel with the power tap up and used to say, "But what's that? Why do you use that? Is it an engine? What is it? does it help you?" No, it doesn't help me going faster. I mean, it helps me, but with the training.
Yes. That's what somebody said to me once. They said, "Well, how does the power meter make me go faster?" I said, "Well, not on the ride, but hopefully big picture it does." Yeah. I did a team time trial. It was called Empire State Games. So it was New York State is a pretty big state here in the US, and they split it up into different regions, and the regions raced each other. And so we had a team time trial, and I just got a power tap hub. And so someone's like, "Hey, do you want to borrow my disc wheel for this time trial?" Should have said yes, but having this new toy, I'm like, I really want the power file. I want to know what watts I'm doing. And I was like, I'm just going to use the power.
So our choice. Yeah.
It's like, we, you know, live and learn. But so you're doing the experiments in the basement.
In the basement at the university, because I had only not so much time to train, because normally an under 23 rider used to ride between 15 and 25 hours per week, and used to ride at least 30 or 40% less. So from 10, 12 to 18 hours per week. Mm-hmm. And so I realized that if I'd have trained like my competitors or my teammates, it wasn't enough. Mm-hmm. I had to train. I had to focus on intensity. Mm-hmm. So I started training for 1 hour, 1 hour and a half on the indoor trainer with high intensity intervals. One of the maybe the craziest thing I've done, I think, on the indoor trainer was because I had the first power files in racing. Mm-hmm. So I started analyzing them, and I realized what we used to do in training is not completely different, but very different from what we do in races. Because I mean, in the early 2000 years or in the late 1990s, what you used to do was training at constant intensity. You used to do you used to say tempo training, a lot of tempo training, a little bit of threshold training, but not so many variations of intensity.
Okay.
And I used to do that too, because I was taught that that was the best way to train. Sometimes some sprints, but not so high intensity effort. Mm-hmm. And then I analyzed my power files and I said, shit, it's not what I'm not training for that, for what I need to do in races, because the power profile was mm-hmm. now everyone knows that, for example, in a criterium, it is up and down, yes. Everything. It's 1,000, 0, 8,200. Mm-hmm. And so I started to do something similar to that. So I started to do 15 seconds effort with 15 seconds recovery, 30 seconds, 30 seconds. And I remember very well, because now I teach at Italian Cycling Federation courses for sports directors, and I often show this picture. I did 1 hour, 15 seconds at 500 watts, and 15 seconds off for 1 hour. So it was crazy.
Nobody wants you as a coach now.
No, but. And at that time, my anaerobic threshold was 360, so it was well mm-hmm. a lot above my anaerobic threshold. But I understood that if you do short efforts, in 1 hour I did 30 minutes at 500 watts. That mm-hmm. for me, of course, it was impossible to do in a continuous workout. I would have been like Cancellara if I could do that, but I wasn't. And so that was very, very fascinating, and I learned a lot from that that period, those years.
How do you kind of go, thinking and looking at yourself, picturing yourself in this basement? You seem obviously as a very intrinsically motivated person from the inside. You're at school, you're training, you're at a really high level. You're also now engaged with world tour athletes who are probably the very same. Do you ever in conversation have athletes that sort of lack that I don't know if you ever coach just amateurs. One thing that I sometimes wonder is I don't necessarily need a cheerleader personally. I like someone there to help me organize the workouts as an athlete. But as a coach, like, what would you say to someone that needs a little like kick in the pants, a little motivation? Is it simply either you do it or you don't perform? Or, you know, do you ever see that scenario anywhere? Or maybe a pro that is like just had a bunch of bad races, on a bad streak. Like, how do you motivate those people? Or do you think it really only can come from inside?
I think a big part comes from the inside. But of mm-hmm. course, a coach can do a lot. I often see some guys who have big, big potential, a big engine, but they don't have the motivation. Or they only have it sometimes, for example, for 2 months or a year, but not for the other 10 months. Mm-hmm. And so in those cases, it's not easy to make them understand that they should be more focused and focused all over the year, because it's not like a normal job. I mean, being a cyclist is a 365 days job. If for 30 days you don't do your job properly, it will affect the rest of the year. Okay. Mm. So this is the earlier you understand this, and the better you can perform. Some years ago, I mean, it was easier to find guys with big engine, but in Italian you say with no head. Okay, they don't have big motivation or big. They don't want to to struggle on the bicycle, okay? But sometimes some of these guys could win or could perform very well, even if they didn't, they weren't focused 365 years days per year. Mm-hmm. Now it's much more difficult because the level is much higher. Everyone does his job at 100%. I mean, 90% of the riders do their job 100%. And if you don't do everything at your best, even if you're a champion, even if you have a big engine, it's not possible to achieve big results. So this is something that is very important for a young rider or for a professional cyclist to understand. Otherwise, they won't be. They cannot do that job. I mean, they have to. They can become recreational cyclists, but being a professional cyclist requires a lot of motivation, a lot of effort.
So something that you said really stood out of just how high the level has become, and especially it seems more people talk about now how specialized everyone is becoming. And what do you think, or maybe when do you think an athlete that has the potential to be a world tour cyclist needs to hone in on, hey, I need to be a one day specialist. Hey, I'm only going to be a time trialist. Maybe I can do GC stuff. You in the basement doing these, you know, you had more of the sprinter phenotype. So maybe you were drawn to this criterium style training. When is it U23 that it's like, hey, you really got to start focusing in because the level is just so high? Or does that come through their racing and maybe they need a few more years under their belt to really get in the pro peloton and figure things out? What kind of conversations do you have with the younger side of athletes coming up that are really high level?
I think it depends. Okay. Mm-hmm. There are some guys who, even when they are 17, 18 years old, you see that, for example, their power profile is very, you can see clearly that it is more a sprinter or more a climber or more a time trialist. And for some guys, it's not like that. Some guys have, for example, a very complete power profile, but they are not super in any area, in any power area, but they are good in all of them. And so for that kind of riders, they probably will understand racing, what is their best attitude and where they can perform at the best. About stage races, the only way to understand that is racing in stage races, because that is something that is not easy to understand from a single test or from just looking at the power profile, okay? Mm-hmm. Because there are super, for example, super climbers that have very high values of watt per kilos in 20 minutes or 60 minutes, but they could also not have good recovery attitude. And so they perform well in 1 day hard races or in short stage races, like 5 days, 1 week stage races, but they don't perform well in grand tours. Mm-hmm. And you can understand that only by racing.
Doing them. Yeah.
Yeah.
I selfishly asked that question because in coaching amateurs and a lot of people that in the US find cycling later in life, people now have access to all these tools. You know, Cat 5 Joey has WKO and seems to know everything, and they are, certain charts stick out to people. So they're like, this is what I am. And I'm like, you haven't even done that race yet. Like, go race and learn, and you're going to progress not only physically, but just how to race. Like, as you're saying, you might be a great climber, but if you're starting to climb in 80th, you're going to get dropped probably.
Yeah,
so it's interesting to see how the physical side and then the actual racing and how people bring it all together is always an interesting story.
Also, the psychological point of view is very interesting in that, because there are riders that maybe from the physiological point of view, they could perform well at stage races, but from the psychological point of view, they can't, because they really can't stay focused for 21 days, because in a stage race, even also a flat stage is very important, because if you get dropped because of a echelon, no, echelon?
Yeah, echelon, yeah.
Echelon, sorry.
No, it's okay.
You can't win, because if you lose 5 minutes in a flat stage with some wind, you go home. I mean, you don't go home, but you can't win. You can't do well. And so also the psychological point of view is very, very important.
To go in on that a little bit more of maybe the mindset and psychology, is there a difference that you see that stands out between the Grand Tour team and then maybe someone going into a one-day race? Or I've only been able to read about the Pro Peloton. I can only watch videos, and it has to be so intense. Like how tired your brain has to be after these races, because there's so much going on. Do you guys work on mindset and the mental aspect of racing with these athletes, or are they all just savages that know how to execute?
I mean, so far, until some years ago, it was it depended only on them, on what they had inside.
Mm-hmm.
In last years, it has been seen that the psychological point of view is very, very important, and so mental coach is a person that can help a lot in these cases. Is like the coach in the teams. And until 15 years old, 10 years old, there were only some coaches, as we said some minutes ago, and there were only a few teams who had a coach inside the team.
Mm-hmm.
But now every team has one, two, our team has three coaches. So it's normal, but until 15 years old, that is not so much. Mm-hmm. It wasn't normal. And I think it will become the same also with mental coaches. Now only some teams have one, but I think in 5 or 10 years, every team will have one or maybe more mental coaches, because that aspect is very, very, very important. And it's something that can be trained, it requires very, very specific training. And on your own, I think it's very difficult. You can't do that. You need someone to tell you how to do that.
And so when you say you could train it, what aspect would you be looking to train? When you say it can be trained mentally, like mental focus or mental, like what aspects of the mental side?
I think that in pro cycling, the aspect that probably really makes the difference is when you're struggling, when you're full gas, to be able to hold on, to go for one more minute, two more minutes, to go one more sprint, one more attack, okay? Mm-hmm. And that, I'm pretty sure that, of course, you need to be physiologically very talented. Mm-hmm. But when you take the first 10 of a GT general classification, from the physiological point of view, probably they are almost the same. I mean, there are very, very, very little differences. Mm-hmm. And probably what makes the difference could really be the psychological aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the one who can win can live with the pain for longer. Okay, can do one more attack, one more sprint, and that can be trained from the physical point of view, but probably also from the psychological point of view.
Did you have any personal pep talk you gave yourself when you were hanging on for dear life and you were like, same thing, like, come on, one more minute, just, you know, group's going to slow down. Were there anything that you remember thinking to just keep you going?
Yes, something, yes. But I remember that in some moments, I couldn't think about that. I mean, yeah. It's difficult to explain. When you're full gas, but you still can think, okay. Mm-hmm. You can think about that, and you can say, okay, hold on, one more minute. They are gonna slow down. Everyone is tired. Everyone is struggling. You're not the only one. Come on. But when you're completely fucked, you can't think about anything. But I'm sure that this can be trained. But mm-hmm. when I was a pro rider, this aspect wasn't probably wasn't considered important. Mm-hmm. No one could imagine how much it could make the difference.
Right. So that's a good segue. Let's talk about importance of stuff. When you think, very open-ended question, we'll ask you as the athlete and then you as a coach now, what do you think is the most important aspect of training?
Mm-hmm. Okay, the most difficult. The most yeah, important,
right? Big question.
Now, what really makes the difference is for sure intensity. Okay, so until 20 years ago, everyone thought that who could train longer could become stronger. Okay. You do 200 kilometers. If you can do 220, you become stronger. 200, 240, you become even stronger. Mm-hmm. But now we know that it's not like this.
Mm-hmm.
If you do 150 kilometers, it's enough. But mm-hmm. You have to do some efforts and some hard efforts in those 150 kilometers.
Can you get specific on those? Like, what type of efforts do you think are most common? It depends on the rider and what they're doing.
Yeah, of course, it depends on the rider, on the period of the year, on the race you're preparing.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think we could divide the different kind of training of workouts in, I think, three areas. Okay. So the strength workouts, power workouts, and you can put there some sprints from different, starting from different speeds, from zero, from 10 kilometers, 20 kilometers, or 30 kilometers per hour with different gears.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that is, we can call it maximum strength. It's not properly maximum, but we can call it like that. Or explosive strength.
Okay.
That is something someone thinks that that kind of workout has to be done only by the sprinters, but that is not true. Also a climber, even if a sprinter, a 70 kilogram sprinter can do 1500 watts or even more, a very strong one can do 1700-1800 watts. A climber, probably a 60 kilos climber, can do 900, mm-hmm. 1000 watts. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't need to train on sprint for the sprint itself, because it's always more difficult to go solo and to win a race solo. Very often you also climbers arrive with a group of three, four, five climbers, and who win is the
The sprinter,
the most sprinter of them. Yeah, sometimes you see sprints between climbers. It looks like a slow mo sprint, but it's like that.
I love it, Claudio.
For a climber, it's also important training with sprints, also to get better from the strength, from the power point of view, and that can help a lot also in climbing. Okay.
And I don't know I'm not a big like reference this study all the time, but I had heard too, when you neglect the anaerobic side and those fibers too much, that when you do use them, so maybe not even a sprint, but a hard surge, they're going to experience more fatigue and metabolites than an athlete that just does some sprint training every once in a while, just keep those fibers active. So I don't know the exact physiological study or data on that, but anecdotally in my head, I'm like, that makes sense. If you never sprint, sprints are going to be really fatiguing. Yeah. So it's interesting. Have you ever heard anything like that?
Yeah, I ever heard anything like that. I mean, in training is always very difficult to say what works, what doesn't work, mm-hmm. what gives you a response or another one, mm-hmm. because it's very different from a rider to another. Mm-hmm. But for sure, even if you're a climber, but you go to a race, in a race before the climb, you do many sprints, mm-hmm. even if you don't want. Okay.
Right.
So if your maximum power is 800 watts and you have to sprint at 750 to stay in the peloton after the corners, you are almost full gas.
Yes.
If you can raise your maximum power to 900 instead of 800, when you go 750, it's a little bit easier, okay? Yes. Because you're not at 90%, but you're at 80% of your maximum. So also that aspect, I think, has to be considered and is important.
Awesome. Sorry to sidetrack you there. So strength and power or explosive power, what was the second one you would consider?
Aerobic power, aerobic capacity. Okay. All right. Okay. So working at, if we talk about training zones, zone 3, zone 4, zone 5, especially zone 4 probably is the... I talk about a road cyclist, okay, of mm-hmm. course. Mm-hmm. If, for example, you talk about a mountain biker, a cross-country mountain biker, it probably is completely different. Mm-hmm. I train a lot of mountain bike riders of high level, and the training for a road rider and for a cross-country mountain biker is pretty different. Mm-hmm. Because of course the races are the duration is different, the intensity is different. So we take as an example only the road cyclists mm-hmm. that have to perform on 4, 5, 6 hours races, sometimes stage races and so on. Also about aerobic power. You can also train with shorter efforts, but very, very high intensity. Maximum aerobic power, for example. How do you establish the different training zones? You can do it in different ways. You can test the most common test is the 20 minutes test. It's very easy to... Easy from the practical point of view is mm-hmm. very hard physically. Mm-hmm. You have to do 20 minutes full gas, and from there you can have all the training zones. For example, you can do in the lab or also on the road. You can do a incremental test. For example, it depends on the rider, of course, but you start from low intensity, 100, 150 watts or 200 if the rider is a high level one. Mm-hmm. And you go up of 20 watts for every minute, for example, or 10 watts, it depends on the rider. And usually the last step that the rider can complete, that is the maximum aerobic power. Okay.
So the last minute that they can hold the full
last minute they can hold, yeah, they can hold for a minute is the maximum aerobic power. For example, a 70 kilos pro rider, it depends, of course, on the characteristics, but normally can go at 480, 500 watts. Mm-hmm. Okay, about seven watts per kilo. Mm-hmm. Normal rider, average rider. Okay, yeah,
it's awesome.
A top rider can go, for example, a top climber whose weight is 60 kilos can also go in an incremental test also to 8 watts per kilo, or even a super top rider even more.
It's wild.
Yeah. And so taking that, you can do many efforts. For example, if my maximum aerobic power is 500 watts, I can do, for example, 30 seconds effort at that power, 30 seconds off, or 40 seconds at that power, 20 seconds off, and so on. You can do many, many, many workouts.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would say that another big area of workouts could be the long endurance rides. Mm-hmm. So usually they are as long as the races from the duration point of view. So 5 or 6 hour rides. Sometimes you can put some effort in them. Sometimes someone doesn't put any effort in them. Someone just rides. It also depends on the period of the year. For example, in this period, November, December, usually when they do long rides, they don't put any effort. But when the season, when the races are coming closer, you also put some efforts in the long rides.
Okay. So are they mostly doing, when they're doing the long rides, just zone 2? I know that we have a couple coaches that I work with that are in Slovenia. One's a Conti guy, and they always laugh at, like, the Americans ride too hard. My coach is in Europe, in UK, and he's like, you could ride a little easier on these rides. So we always joke, we're like, we got to go do Euro endurance. They're cruising, chatting pace, really, just for the 5 hour rides.
It depends on the period of the year. In this period, in the first, in the winter period, usually, yes. So zone 2. You do the climbs at zone 3.
Okay. So it's, there's a little effort behind them. People, because that's So I'm actually in Florida now, which is super flat, but I live in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And so if I do a 5 hour ride, it's 10,000 feet. Your meters is like
three. 3,000. Yeah.
3,000. Yeah. So it's hilly. And, you know, if I'm 80 kgs, maybe plus 1 or 2. If I go endurance, it's like just kind of slow. So I'm like a little bit in the tempo. I'm not like cranking threshold all the time, but it also, from the mental side, I'm like, I like riding my bike. So it's a little like,
no, if you do 5 hours, only zone 1, zone 2, I think you fall asleep on the bicycle.
I love it.
I think it doesn't have so much sense to go so slow for so many hours. Okay. Mm-hmm. Some little effort at zone 3, but you don't even have to think about that, because if you go climbing, of course, Pogacar, to go at zone 3 has to push a lot, because probably he has 5.5 watts per kilo at zone 3. But for a normal rider who has, I don't know, at zone 3, 3 watts per kilo, if he goes on a climb, he can't go slower than that almost.
Right.
So it's okay.
Yeah. What's it like then working with World Tour pros? And we'll actually have to do the intro at the end. I was so excited to talk to you, man. We didn't even do an intro. I was just like really looking forward to this. What's it been like? How, You know, and yourself as an athlete, I don't know if there was still the rule back then that if you were a world tour, you had to have a coach. But now you have athletes. Are they mostly welcoming to all the new data and science? I'm sure it varies athlete to athlete, but at the same time, I'm sure you're a coach that's been a pro, and you know what it was like to have somebody maybe trying to tell you what to do, and you're like, I kind of know myself. Like, what's that interaction like?
Yeah, of course it depends, but
yeah,
the young guys, everyone knows about power, efforts, workouts. Usually they are very experienced about this. Some years ago, probably the old riders, some of them was hard to train with power, to train with high intensity efforts, and so on. But now, on last years, everyone has understood that that's the only way to train. Mm-hmm. So also the older riders, they learned that how to train with a power meter, how to follow a training program based on high intensity efforts, and so that is not a problem. Mm-hmm. In my case, for me, I found easier to be listened from mm-hmm. the riders, mm-hmm. because when they know that I've been a professional cyclist too, mm-hmm. They know that I'm not just talking, but right. I did that. I did, mm-hmm. I tried what I suggest them to do, mm-hmm. and I still try with, because I still ride my bicycle, not mm-hmm. of course not so fast as I used to do. I don't have so much time to train, but when I can, I always take the bicycle and go for a ride. I like doing efforts because I like trying on myself, feeling what the athletes, my athletes, will feel when I will propose them the workouts. Mm-hmm. And so of course, not all the coaches ride a bicycle. Not all of them have been pro cyclists. It's normal, but I think that is the plus, the thing I can give more to them.
Yes.
So I think that in my case, it is what makes the difference. I mean, I have the theoretical point of view, but also the practical point of view.
Right.
And so I think that this is what in my case makes really makes the difference.
Do you then, are you in like, I don't always know how all the roles work at different teams. Are you actually in someone's Training Peaks or whatever software and like putting yeah. workouts in there? Or do you more find it important to look at the big picture and trends? And I guess if you have a younger athlete that's already very familiar with power and has an idea of what's gotten them to this pro level, which is more important, the micro side of do this workout on Thursday, or hey, over the past month, this is what I'm noticing? How do you balance that type of thing?
Also, this depends on the rider. There are okay. riders who like and who need to be told everything. I mean, mm-hmm. Today you have to do, I don't know, 4 hours training, ride with 1 10-minute effort like this, mm-hmm. 1 20-minute, 1 30. And there are some riders who like to be more free. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I tell them, okay, today we work on maximum aerobic power. So we can do, I don't know, 4 minutes efforts. But I don't need to tell them you have to go, for example, 480 watts. They know. Mm-hmm. They know their maximum aerobic power. They know today they feel very well. They go 500. Mm-hmm. Today they don't feel so well. They go 450. Mm-hmm. They have experience. They have sensibility. and they know how to handle this. In my experience, I would say 80% of the riders are in the first category, so the ones who need to be told
interesting
almost everything.
Yeah,
20% is of the second category. Is... Nowadays, some years ago, probably was the opposite, but now the young riders are they have been taught working like this, and sometimes this is not always a good something good, okay? Because if they don't have the plan, if today the power meter doesn't work, they are like lost.
Yes.
Okay. And so from a point of view, it's good because they are very precise. They do the workouts perfectly. They download every day their bike computer. You always know what they do. Probably the big part of them give you good feedbacks about what they did. But I repeat, sometimes it's not so good because they are too, they are like slave of the power meter, yeah. Slave of the numbers, and the power meters today doesn't work. It's
the ride didn't happen. Yeah.
Yes. Or sometimes some of them don't even have the sensibility to understand when, for example, the power meter doesn't say the truth. I mean, sometimes power meters are very precise instruments, but sometimes they don't work properly. Okay, if you probably because you don't use them properly. So if you don't make the zero offset properly, they could also tell you that you're going 20 watts or 30 watts more than you are or less than you are. And I mean, if my power meter says 10 watts more or less, I realize immediately. But some guys, even if it says 30 watts or more or less, they don't realize. And so they train lower intensity or much higher intensity without knowing them, without thinking, realizing. Yeah. So they sometimes they only care about the numbers. And I experienced this also in races. In fact, there was a period with some riders some years ago, not when in Astana, but in a smaller team, we had many young guys. I used to work with Bagdiani. He's a pro continental team that was all composed by Italian young guys,
bright kids. I love seeing that. Like, can't miss them.
And with some of them, we had to take off the power value from the racing
from the screen.
From the racing screen, because they were a slave of that. Oh, if they knew that they could do, I don't know, for 10 minutes effort, they could do 500 watts. If they were seeing that they were going 550 in the first minute of climb, they immediately got dropped. But racing is not like that. It's not a time trial. You have to follow the fastest guys if you want to win, if you want to go to do a good performance. And so for some of them it was difficult to not to see the numbers, and they were a slave of them.
This is, you may, that whole clip right there, I think one of the best things that my coach Tom has helped me get a better sense on of, I've been training for 13, 14 years. And I think with the power meter, it's very easy as the athlete, when you're looking at your own calendar, doing your own workouts, to get so focused on that. And he's even said things, you know, remember, like, day to day, if you're riding the bike, that's a great thing. Don't get so hyper focused on one workout. That's not going to change the world. There's no magic workout also. And so being a little bit looser with that and going by how you're feeling, and remembering that, you know, all these 4x10 or 3x15. Like, it's for convenience of us as an athlete and a coach to have a point, but who's to say it's not supposed to be 13 minutes and 33 seconds or 20 watts less? Or so you make such a great point. And man, we're already at an hour. It's is there anything that you maybe want to say or talk about that the time went so quickly? I could talk to you for another 5 hours. I really appreciate you doing this. The one question that people always are curious to hear from someone like you, Cat one or two, which is just amateur, good cyclist here. Yeah. What do you think's the next, what do you think they have to focus on to make it to that pro level?
I mean, I think that to turn pro now, of course, you need numbers. You have to be. You gotta have the engine, because you don't turn pro if you don't have the physiological values to stay in the pro peloton. Mm-hmm. The numbers are a condition necessary, but not sufficient. Okay, so it doesn't mean that if you have the numbers, you can be a good pro. There is much more, and so I think a category one, category two rider, if has the potential to become a pro, has to focus on the training, of course, but also on nutrition, on the mental aspect. Also, it has to be an athlete at 360 degrees. Okay, so also take care of his body. With, for example, core stability training, stretching, also to train the technique, the guiding, and the handling of the bicycle. Mm-hmm. The speeds are always higher, and mm-hmm. that requires better handling skills. Mm-hmm. If you're not so good at riding the bicycle, at descending or cornering and so on, you have to train for that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, like the kids, like the little kids, you have to do. In Italy, we say gymkhana. I don't know how to say it in English. Like a skill little
tracks. Gymnastics.
No, not gymnastic. Gymkhana. It's like little tracks with many corners.
Oh, okay.
You have to turn right and left, little up, little down.
Okay.
Many different.
We need that here. Yeah. I need that.
Yeah. Sometimes I remember that we my dad, when I was a young kid, we used to go in the parking of a supermarket, and we used to go right, left between the cars, between the parking area, to learn how to corner. Mm. And that looks silly, but I think it's not. It's very important. I learned a lot from that. Or for example, if you have difficulties in riding the bicycle when it's wet, you could do some cyclocross, for example, to learn some skills about riding the bicycle in different grip conditions. Also, for example, some track training could be, of course, you have to, you gotta live close to a track. But if you have the possibility, I think it's very important, because you can learn more. You can improve your abilities, and it's something that I think is very important.
I think the huge takeaway is how many things you have to be good at to be a pro cyclist. Just so many aspects to it that are so far beyond power, which is one thing that we all focus on, but there's so many other pieces to it. It's just an incredible sport with incredible athletes at that highest level. It's wild.
Yeah, it is.
Claudio, thank you, man. This was so awesome. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. And let's actually, I'll clip it to the beginning. Let's do the intro real quick. usually I always had said that this is the easiest question, but people sometimes pause. So the hardest question first, Who is Claudio Cucinata?
Who is guy? He's a passionate. First, he's a passionate coach, passionate cyclist. I love coaching, but I also I still love riding. So when I have 5 minutes of time, I try to focus on myself, on my physical shape. And I try to do every day the best for my athletes, but also I try to give to be an example for them, and to try to train for the little time I have at my best.
And you're at, and what's your role at Astana these days?
Now at Astana, we just all the riders are starting to train on these days. Someone has already started. Someone will start next week. But usually, they did 2 or 3 weeks of vacation, of rest, and now they are all starting training again. And from the beginning of December, we will go in the first training camp in Spain. So 2-3 weeks training camp. Then everyone will go home for the Christmas holidays. And then at the beginning of January, after the Christmas holiday, we will go again for the second training camp. And at the end of January, beginning of February, the racing season will start again. So
looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Well, Claudio, I hope you enjoy your afternoon. Thank you again. Yeah. We'll look forward to posting this. I'll tag you. Are you on Instagram?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah. Shoot you a tag there. And thank you again. Thank you. Enjoy the weekend. And we'll talk
later.
Thank
you. Thank you. It was fun.
Yeah, awesome. Wealth of knowledge that we like just got to scratch the surface of. But it was, man, it's incredible. Okay. Have a great week.
Thanks a lot.
See you. Thank you. Bye-bye. Ciao, ciao.
Bye.